This is Bill and Margaret Munhausen, and we're here for another episode of What Makes Sense. And we've been talking a little bit about what we ought to talk about. And what I want to talk about is kind of piggybacking on a conversation we had with our grandson. I don't want to betray any confidences or anything, but I'm sure Jordan is okay with it. We were talking about history, and I'm not even sure how we got into history. He was expressing some of the faults of the United States, and that he was against Israel, and that he was against Christopher Columbus, of all things. I'm not even sure how we got on all those tangents. Do you remember, sweetheart?
No, I don't, but I think that we should let them know that Jordan is actually a young adult right now. He's 25 years old, so he's been out in the world for a little while after finishing school. And
yeah, he's by no means ignorant. He's a smart young guy.
He is.
And I even found myself agreeing with some of his assertions because they're based in truth. We both are kind of looking at it from the point of view of truth.
Yeah, he's very kind to people, and he really wants to do what's right, and he just has just a different understanding of things from all the people he's been around and what he's done. So we're trying to see how the worldview really comes into our young people, and the things that we kind of took for just natural knowledge that everybody knows about these things has really been distorted for a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Just yesterday, I pulled up Robert Kennedy Jr.'s State of the Union message. My wife and I watched it, and we both agreed it was I think it was an important message, because we grew up in the era when Robert Kennedy Jr. was a little boy, and his dad, Robert Kennedy, ran for president, and his uncle, John F. Kennedy, was probably my first political hero. Let's take a few minutes to listen to Robert Kennedy Jr.
I'm Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and I'm running as an independent candidate for President of the United States. I grew up in an America that seemed to have achieved its promise as an exemplary nation. Modern democracy had spread from one nation, ours, in 1776, to six by 1865, and to 190 by the 1960s. We had become the city on the hill. We were a moral authority around the globe. Our government, institutions, our Congress, the court, the regulatory agencies, and even the American press were renowned for their integrity, and they were revered worldwide. Other nations wanted our American leadership. They knew the difference between leadership and bullying, which is something our current leaders seem to have forgotten. We were the template of liberty, proof that for a country to thrive, its people must be free. Free to speak, free to worship, free to build great companies, free to start small businesses. We were the freest country in the world, and by no coincidence, also the most prosperous. Working Americans could provide for their families on a single salary. They could buy a home, raise a family, save for retirement without mountains of debt. We made the best music. We made the best movies. We made gold standard automobiles that everybody in the world wanted. We made blue jeans. We reconstructed Europe. We put men on the moon. We have the world's healthiest, best-educated children. Our productivity, ingenuity, our can-do spirit were the envy of the world. We had confidence in our strength, our capacity, and the limitless potential of our country. Yeah, we had serious racial and environmental problems, but in the heady days of my youth, the environmental movement and the civil rights movement were picking up steam. My father and some of his allies were fighting to eliminate the last pockets of hunger in Appalachia and the Mississippi Delta and on the Indian reservations. And we became for the first time a true constitutional democracy in this country, with all races voting and holding political office. Other countries aspired to be like us, and our children grew up proud of their passport, proud of their flag. My uncle, President Kennedy, left us a legacy of peace and the hope of ending the arms race and winding down the Cold War. Those were the traditions of freedom, prosperity, and peace that my father, my uncle, and Martin Luther King Jr. were striving to protect and advance. In the half century since their deaths, we've lost touch with that vision for our country. But I want to tell you right now that we can still restore that America, the America that almost was, and yet may be. But we have to start by being honest with ourselves. Neither my uncle nor my father would recognize the version of America that we have today. We become a nation of chronic illness, of violence, of loneliness, depression, and division, and poverty. Our great cities are becoming tent encampments, modern-day Hoovervilles filled with undocumented immigrants and dispossessed Americans and people living in their cars, plagued by mental illness and addiction and despair. Our border has come under the control of criminal drug cartels that traffic in desolation and fentanyl and in busloads of desperate human beings. Our children are drowning in a crisis of alien nation of dispossession and complete disconnection from their communities. We've lost far more of our young people to drugs in the last decade than in the 20-year Vietnam War. We've printed 9 centuries worth of money in a little over a decade and spent $8 trillion on regime change wars. Those wars have made America less safe, our country less strong, and the world far less stable, while sending prices through the roof as our infrastructure falls apart. Tens of millions of young Americans no longer even dream of owning their own home. What happened to America, the land of opportunity, where you could be sure that if you worked hard and played by the rules, that you would have a decent life? All the new wealth of the last generation has gone to the billionaires and to transnational corporations, while our tattered middle class, our infrastructure, our industry have been hollowed out from the inside. Instead of promise, we've left our kids sick and drowning in debt. The public debt has gone from about $5 trillion under President George W. Bush to $34 trillion today, and U.S. household debt is at a record high of $17.3 trillion. If you include discouraged workers, our true unemployment rate is 23%. Young parents face housing, grocery, and childcare costs that are unaffordable. Too many Americans are living bleak and hopeless lives, dreading the one medical emergency or the car repair that will tip them over the edge into homelessness. We rank 40th globally in our people's health and wellness. Out of the richest countries in the world, the United States is 35th in child poverty rates, just above Mexico. We rank 36th in literacy and 45th in press freedom. We have one of the highest cancer rates in the world, and our life expectancy now ranks 59th, according to the World Bank. That's right behind Algeria, which spends less than 1/30th per capita of what we spend. But even these grim figures hide the full picture of our dire health crisis. We now have the worst health outcomes in the rich world, the highest maternal mortality rates, the highest number of gun deaths per capita, and the highest number of teen pregnancies. We lead the world in obesity and chronic disease. According to CDC, 60% of Americans have at least one chronic condition. When my uncle was president, only 6% of Americans had chronic disease. And all of these plights fall heaviest on our young people. 4 in 10 of them suffer depression, and 1/2 of them have considered suicide. 1 in 10 has anxiety. 1 in 10 has ADHD. 1 in 5 is obese. It's time for us to say enough is enough. We were once a free and thriving nation, the healthiest and strongest in the world. What we once were, we can be again. How do I know that? It's because everywhere I go in this country, I see a profound determination among Americans to heal. We might have become the sickest country on earth, but we also have the most ingenious healers, both inside and outside conventional medicine. We may have sky-high levels of depression and addiction, but we also have innovators who have opened up new frontiers in recovery. We have some of the world's most depleted agricultural soils, but also some of the world's most innovative and energetic regenerative farmers. We have serious economic problems, but we also have the brightest and most ambitious entrepreneurs. We face hunger and homelessness, and yet we meet it with the highest philanthropic rates in the world and bottomless kindness and compassion. We may be on the mat today, but we can be on our feet and happy and healthy and strong again with good leadership tomorrow. Our people and our system were built for resilience. And here's the most important thing I want to tell you about the state of our union. Our nation seems more divided than ever, but Americans everywhere want to heal that divide. Our nation has become artificially divided by political forces that can survive only when we, the people, are at war with each other. People are tired of being manipulated by fear. We learned that lesson during COVID. We recognize that the same techniques of manipulating fear are being used by elites today to corral us into voting for one political candidate or the other. Americans are tired of these dire warnings that to preserve democracy itself, you better vote for our guy. I can tell you that in every state of this union, people are rejecting fear-mongering. 80% of Americans say they don't want to be forced to choose in this election between the lesser of two evils. They're tired of voting against something or someone. I see it in the crowds of mixed Republicans and Democrats and independents who attend my rallies that a growing number of Americans are rejecting divisiveness. They're ready to unite, to rebuild this country, and to fulfill the promise of the America of my youth. They're ready to vote for something and for someone they like, for someone who represents hope and healing, or someone with an inspiring vision for America's future, for a future that they can believe in. So that's the State of the Union that I want to bring you today. It's a nation that hungers to heal. It's a nation ready to face reality, to rebuild, to end the forever foreign wars, to clean out the corrupt Washington establishment, and to turn again toward peace, freedom, good health, and prosperity. When we unite in that vision, we're going to be unstoppable. Thank you, and God bless you.
Way back in 1960, when John Kennedy became president, his administration was referred to as Camelot. It was referred to as, it was kind of thought of by the media, and I think most of America, as a new beginning, because here was this young, vital guy who was president of the United States instead of some old guy.
And he had a beautiful wife, Jacqueline, who was very classy and very good, too.
Yeah, and a whole family that was a rich family, but dedicated to public service. So they were the morally right kind of rich family, people who didn't want to just luxuriate in their wealth, but use their position to try to do things to promote good. He was a champion of the little guy. He was a champion of Black Americans, African Americans. He was also a strong leader. He was willing to confront the what was then the Soviet Union in Cuba, even though it was a rather unsuccessful confrontation. So it was an era when everything was positive. Robert Kennedy Jr. shared, we had put men on the moon. All of our institutions were admired, even our press. Believe it or not, the news media was admired around the world because of their objectivity and fairness. And everything about America was something all the world wanted to emulate. We produced great movies, we produced great automobiles, great technological achievements, lots of prosperity, and complete freedom. I remember we used to have a saying, it's a free country, isn't it? But almost nobody says that anymore because very little seems to be free anymore. So what has happened in the last 50 years is an erosion of everything good in America. And we get to a point now where a young guy like Jordan looks at America and he sees a lot of extreme wealth on one hand and extreme poverty on the other, and a lot of media that isn't admirable, that definitely seems biased regardless of which side you want to follow, and politicians who are mostly getting wealthy and not taking care of the real problems. So from a young person's perspective, it's a dark-looking world right now.
I actually just got a little bit of an epiphany for me. But yeah, back when John Kennedy was president, the whole United States had this Christian worldview, and it was acknowledging of God being the one that has given us our rights, that God is above everything. And now we have a worldview that blocks God out and has everybody having their own truth and believe whatever you want, and that makes it true. And you see how crazy it's gotten just in the real world, but I didn't think of it as because of their worldview. Mm-hmm. And over, I'm starting to see how the worldview is distorted so badly. One of the people that we enjoy listening to on the radio is a pastor. His name is Jack Hibbs, and he's out of California. And he had given the prayer for at our Capitol, and he was like censored after it from these different ones, and it was like he just gave what was truth. He talked about our Constitution and how we're given these freedoms, and he talked about the dependence on all our forefathers on God, and it was an amazing talk.
Yeah, and his problem was that a lot of people in the Capitol and in the Congress are atheists. They don't believe in God. So they hate the idea that God is somehow in control or responsible for the goodness of the country. So it's what Margaret was referring to. We no longer have a shared idea of what is true and what is right and what is just. We have a very divided country because there's no longer this Christian consensus that we all enjoyed when we were younger. And it makes it very difficult to accomplish anything. I was in a meeting just a day or so ago where a mom stood up before the crowd and explained that she didn't want, this was in the library board, she didn't want any kind of censorship of materials because she wanted her children to be exposed to every idea. Then we had another mom stand up and say, well, she considered it her responsibility to care for her children and make sure they weren't exposed to unwholesome ideas, you might say. So two different moms, two different philosophies of motherhood, and they're unreconcilable, because if you follow the one mom, you're going to have an environment where anything goes, and if you follow the other mom, you're going to have an environment where some things are prohibited. And we are on the board trying to referee these two points of view, and there's no way to reconcile them. And that's just a microcosm of what's happening in the country.
And another thing, Bill and I just happened to be watching a video our daughter had been telling us about. She runs a wonderful school. And it was all about the French Revolution, which was taking place about the same time of our American Revolution. Only theirs was based on not coming under God, but of man and reason being the king of all the things, that they were going to make everybody equal and have all of this just being done by reason. And it was horrible. They were just chopping off people's heads, and they were rioting, and they were doing all of the things that, I mean, this, I never seen it. I had known about the guillotine and the revolution and what went on. But when you watch a movie series on it that is really in depth, and all of this evil that's taking place, it was just, it fell apart. And yeah,
if you think about it, equality is not enough. Equality without morality means everybody does what they think is right. And during the French Reign of Terror, some people were doing things that were just outrageously terroristic, but there was no way to moderate it because they had rejected God, they had rejected Christianity, they had rejected any moral compass. Everybody was equal, and everybody was equally sinful, to put it in Christian terms.
Yeah, we've also seen oftentimes that there's just a tipping point in a country of what happens to it, that it's by a very small margin, and the things will tip into the way of justice or into the way of just chaos. Mm-hmm. And it's like I see that happening right now in America with our grandchildren and everything, that we want to bring them up so that they will have a Christian worldview and know what the Lord says to us of how to behave and to love one another and to do these good deeds and things. And we're concerned, especially about the younger ones, but now we can see with being around the older ones that we kind of missed a couple of points of being right there for them.
You know, and it occurred to me as I was listening, that I probably gave you the wrong impression when I look at the Kennedy years as just the good old days. Because it wasn't just that it was a good time that I remember from my youth, but there was really a different spirit in the country. Everything was rapidly improving. In 1963 or 64, I believe, we had passed the Civil Rights Amendment. So up until that time, there was some racial strife going on. But we agreed as a nation that we would all stand behind our brothers and that all men were created equal. And we made that equality formal. And everybody believed in it. As a son of immigrants, I didn't inherit some of the kind of racial opinions Americans may have had in the 1950s. So it never occurred to me to be against a particular race, which was a great gift that I wasn't raised in some kind of a racist situation. But there was a tremendous optimism. I think that's the big difference between then and now, that anything could be fixed, anything could be improved. We could make everything better. We could improve things. And now there's a kind of a fatality in feeling. People think, well, this is just the way life is. Our standard of living is going downhill. Our ability to earn money is going downhill. All of the big corporations are in charge of everything. We can't compete with them, so we just have to get jobs and survive as best we can. And that's just not the America I grew up in. It's not the truth even now. But it is the perception that a lot of young people have. Jordan, for example, would like to have his own coffee barista shop, but he can't compete, or most people think they can't compete with somebody like Starbucks or whatever big corporation is running that area. So the big difference is optimism, and it's hard to overcome because as older people, we could speak a lot into the lives of the young, but they don't really associate with us. For the most part, younger people now listen to media, they listen to what's on their smartphone, they listen to other influencers of their own age, and there's kind of a digital barrier between us and them. People don't get together as a family the way they once did, and that means that the young can't learn from the old, and the old can't learn from the young. We were just talking about that as far as our church, because we wanted to go to Sunday school to get really closely acquainted with people, and we quickly learned that there were only old people in Sunday school. And our daughter pointed out to us that young people just don't go to Sunday school. So where is that forum where people of all ages can get together so that they can share with one another and really build each other up, as Scripture says, to edify one another, instead of all be separated and listening to their digital devices?
Yeah, I kind of see, and I'm in total agreement with, we need to be optimistic, and we need to be using our brains and figuring out ways to make the improvements that are needed in our country. And we have a great example happening right now with the border chaos that is going on in America, and with all of these undocumented people coming into our country illegally that should be sent away right away. And it was under the federal government for a long time, and they did nothing to really stop it. And Texas had to make the decisions themselves because it got so bad that they would stop it as a state, which they have the right to do and the power to do. And other states are backing them. I know Missouri has sent some of our National Guard and things down to help with the border crossing, which it improved dramatically and right away. And the federal government wanted to get back in on it and pass some legislation. And they were going to allow, was it 5,000 a day or something, or a week? I mean, it was this awesome and crazy number of people that they still would let through instead of just stopping all of it. And Texas is stopping all of it and putting up the means by which to do it. And the other states are helping them. And America was built on that system of states having their individual rights. and so that we would be able to handle this crisis. And the federal government has just gotten way out of control, and they are making really bad decisions. One of the things that I found out along about, I don't know, 10 years ago, was that we don't pay our senators anymore. Originally, they were on the salary here with us, so they would really represent us, because we would fire them and we would just then replace them with somebody else. But now the federal government pays them, and so they do everything to please the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just in the process of reading a book called The Real Lincoln, which is about Abraham Lincoln and the results of the Civil War. My wife is cringing a little bit about this. Lincoln has become kind of a sacred person historically. So we have to be careful about if we say anything against Abraham Lincoln. But what actually was one of the bad results of the Civil War was the federal government, the national government, became supreme. Because part of the war was about states' rights, the rights of the southern states to do their own thing, to have their own rules. And those rules, and we're talking about slavery now, the evidence is that most of the world's countries eliminated slavery without warfare.
And we were going to do that.
And because the natural tendency, especially for Americans, was to see the injustice of slavery, because we believe in the liberty of all men, and that all men are created equal. So the trend was going to be for slavery to go away on its own. But anyhow, one of the unintended, I think, or bad results of the Civil War is that the federal government got to a point where states no longer had the right to secede. And that might seem like a good idea, but the country was founded on the principle that states were sovereign. The states created the federal government. And the wonderful thing about that system is that states have a certain control over what happens in their own borders. That's exactly what's happening with Texas now. They're reasserting their sovereignty by saying, if the federal government isn't going to protect us, we'll protect ourselves. And that's the way the system was intended to work. And up until the early 1900s, senators were appointed by their state legislature, so they represented the state in Washington, D.C. Now that they're popularly elected, they no longer represent their state. And so they're just kind of like anybody else in the Capitol, basically operating so that they can get reelected. So all of those things are true. That's part of what's happening to our young people. And I don't really know the solution. I always like to have a solution. I think the solution that we can apply to ourselves is to try to keep our families close, have more of those dinners as a family together, speak to the kids and speak your knowledge to them. And especially we should be spokespeople for optimism, because there's still a lot of liberty in America. There's still a lot of freedom. There's still a lot of someone like me can run a radio station. I used to run a museum. We did all kinds of things that seemed impossible to people, but nothing was impossible. It's all doable if you take the time to do it. Somebody asked me how I learned to do radio, and I learned it by getting on YouTube and asking questions. You don't have to go to a university. You don't have to get credentialed. You don't have to have special training. It's all freely available. And that's what I love about the internet. It's this great source of freedom if we would use it that way, instead of depending on these hierarchical systems and universities and educational processes and certifications. Anything you want to learn, if you're willing to do it, is learnable. Pass that optimism on to your kids.
Yes, I'm in agreement.
Okay, and that's all the time we have today. Thank you very much for joining us. Okay, bye.